The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome in to First Things First. I'm Sarah Kustak, filling in for Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. Nick Wright, how are you guys doing? It is wonderful to have you back.
Doing well. Good to see you again, brother.
Good. Enjoy the week. My coffee and everything.
I'm not going to hit your coffee. Sarah, thank you so much for last week.
Oh, are you kidding?
Helping out along with Gottlieb and Broussard. It is very good to be back.
I end up thanking people for they getting compensated for it. So I'm glad y'all could work last
week. Let me just say, I was glad to be here, but I'm glad both of you are back. And we're going to start. Well, go ahead.
Where you want to start?
No, I was going to start where you were at.
To quote Don Draper.
Who's my fill-in?
Who's your fill-in?
Because I used to be with a fair-skinned guy sitting over here. Now I'm with a guy that's chocolata.
Hey, by the way, America, the over-under we set was 92 seconds before Chris made a tan joke, and it only took him 63. So
you look great. Right, it's great. It's glowing.
You're how do you like your coffee? Don't. How do you like your partner?
I try to keep up.
How you like your beans roasted? Dark.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, and we're going to start where Chris Carter was this weekend, Canton, Ohio, where they inducted the 2018 class into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It was highlighted with greats like Ray Lewis, Brian Urlacher, Brian Dawkins, and Randy Moss. CeCe, you, of course, were in attendance. How special was this weekend?
All the Hall of Fame weekends are very, very special. They have little things, little sub-stories, though. This year, I thought it was a combination. This might be one of the greatest classes that we've ever had inducted to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. The great stories from Kramer with the Packers and his long wait. We have a lot of Packers that are in. I know Nick is into Dr. Doom.
Robert Brazil, man.
I mean, his Houston meeting his Oilers family, great. Spending the whole weekend with his family. He was a blessing. I believe like him and I would be lifelong friends. Father and mother, 84, 85, scooting around Canton. Like man, what y'all been waiting on? Like, we've been ready for this, like, ready to throw a party. And then, of course, the headliners in Urlacher, Ray Lewis, and Randy Moss. It was a very, very special weekend for my new classmates, for my new
Hall of Fame brothers.
Hall of Fame brothers. And then, of course, with T.O. not being there, was great discussions about what we'll do moving forward as far as the Hall of Fame, in case someone wanted to follow up on what T.O. had did.
What I think is so cool about this is... just watching from afar. Listen, there is no such thing as a perfect speech because everyone wants speeches to be shorter or to be what they would do, and there's no such thing as a perfect speech. But what all of these men had the ability to do is for one last time, and I know, like, Randy's still on TV and Ray's with us on TV, so a lot of these guys have not moved out of the spotlight, but for one last time...
There is no spotlight like that spotlight.
Exactly.
Even when you're working in national telecast and everything, having 22,000, the largest crowd that we've had at Tom Benson Stadium, so that national spotlight, man, it's even bigger than being on TV.
Well, and because when you're on... We're on TV right now. There's other sports shows on TV. Like, when Randy... In that moment, the entire sports world stops and pays attention to you one last time. And I think it's got to be such a cool thing. Go ahead.
And we're very, very fortunate that we got some of the behind-the-scenes video from the Hall of Fame. I was able to get them to make 9 minutes of stuff that some publicly seen, some of this stuff has not been seen. So to have it in the show, be able to share it with our fans and everything, I think was really special. Because the weekend in itself and the stories to football heaven, all these guys had a tremendous journey. None of these guys, when they were born, like, okay, they're going to end up in the Hall of Fame. So I think the uniqueness of all the stories was fabulous.
Did it feel, there's so much discussion around how special this class is. You've been there before, obviously, getting inducted, but mm-hmm. the years following, did it feel different?
No, it felt the same. We knew that there's always certain things that you have to address, if that being even when the concussions, if that being the protest. We, at the Ray Nitschke Luncheon, when we get together, we typically address those things. And this year was no different. We addressed the elephant in the room, Terrell Owens, as far as what we're going to do moving forward. Got the opinions of the Hall of Famers that were in the room. So it was the same. It was the same, even, and this is just another issue that we had to address.
Well, I think when Sarah says that, because I know we're going to talk about the T.O. stuff later, different as far as the caliber, when you said one of the best classes ever, when you have the, and so my guess is, I'm not going to speak for you here, but I've heard you talk about the Hall enough to know that once you're in the Hall of Fame, there is no tiers of the Hall. There is no hierarchy of the Hall. Right. There are, you guys are all on equal playing field. That's what Chris always, your line about the barbershop debates. Like, how good was Chris Carter? Well, he's a Hall of Famer. Like, it is the statement that ends the debates. From a guy who's not in it, who does do, like, look at things in a more of a ranking historical perspective, what is true is what this class has is arguably the greatest middle linebacker ever, and certainly one of the greatest of his, certainly the greatest of his generation in Ray Lewis, and then another damn good inside linebacker in Brian Urlacher. It's got the two of the three most statistically accomplished receivers in Randy and T.O., even if that T.O. wasn't there. And that's not even to mention Brian Dawkins, who was a generational safety. Robert Brazil, who I thought, my time in Houston, people love him there as an Oiler. He's one of those former Oilers that's almost a man without a country because the Titans bought up all their rights, but the Titans don't really embrace those guys, and the Houston Texans aren't allowed to. And then, I mean, whether it's Bobby Bethard or Jerry Kramer, two guys that I think the average sport, even a pretty diehard football fan, and doesn't remember Jerry Kramer. Mm-hmm. And a lot of guys don't know Bobby Bethard. They're like, right. Oh, is he related to CJ? Well, yeah, he actually is related to the...
Yeah, CJ was at the ceremony, too.
He got a day... Shanahan and the Niners mm-hmm. gave him time off. So just as far as the totality of accomplishments, there is no bad Hall of Fame class, but there are particularly unbelievable ones. And this one, at least in my eyes, was.
Yeah, and there was a couple special moments that stood out. One, Bob Kraft, seeing him and Bill Belichick surprised Randy Moss on the stage before his speech. I took some pictures of that. That was a special moment. That touched Randy because he didn't think that they were going to be there. So that surprise visit from them. And then just seeing Dick Butkus address Ray Lewis and Brian Urlacher. Now, I didn't know that Brian Urlacher and Dick Butkus, there might have been like a little tension there,
yeah.
Just based on them being there in Chicago. But seeing Dick Butkus address these players, those are a couple of the really, really special behind-the-scenes moments that I really will take from this class of 2018.
When you look at the speeches, and thinking about when you were preparing your speech and the stage you're at, the moment that is, when does it hit you? When does it hit you, the totality of the moment as a player, as an inductee into the Hall of Fame, when you are about to give that speech?
Well, the speech, I call it the most important speech that you'll ever give. And the reason why, because you'll never get that stage again. And you know it's easy to mess up. You can miss a lot of people. There's really a lot of people to thank in doing it. So the magnitude of it, and the players that are already in the Hall, we always tease the player, who's going to be the first to cry, and have you worked on your speech? Now, from a timing standpoint, how do you get your life story in 10 to 15 minutes? Well, Ray Lewis, 45 minutes. But how do you do that? It's almost impossible. Some of them did a great job at it. I'm into being on time. So I just don't believe you should have a long, long speech. It's very, very hard to do, and especially most of the time, this is kind of your swan song in sports. Like, we're honoring you, and after this, it's going to be hard for you to get any other honors. So it's very, very hard to be able to put all those words together in timely fashion.
One note about the speech that I think is interesting that I learned this morning talking to Chris is, you when you are elected to the Hall, you consider that like getting engaged to be married. And the speech is your wedding day. And by that, I mean this. You guys had a luncheon Friday.
Yes.
Were those guys Hall of Famers at that luncheon?
Not technically. The way the hall has been established, that's not, no.
No, you're
There's a series of events that must take place.
And the last and the final culmination is the revealing of the bust.
Yes.
You get the jacket on Friday.
Yes.
You reveal the bust, and then you do your speech. And it's after the speech that you're officially in the Hall of Fame. And so it's a very important moment. Like, I had been calling, you know, Randy, first ballot Hall of Famer. Technically, that wasn't true until Saturday. He had been elected, and so that's why.
And the reason for that is your bust is unveiled on Saturday night at the enshrinement. Then you have your speech, and then once your speech is ended, if you have a party that night, typically your bust will travel to your party. But that night will be the first night that your bust is in the hall. So that is the reason why the system of events with the selection at the Super Bowl and then the other things that happen afterwards, the ceremonies, that it's an amazing accomplishment.
And that's also that last part is also why, and we'll talk more about T.O. later, why T.O. not participating in the ceremony was for the Hall of Famers maybe a bigger deal than to the general public, because he was waiving the moment where he actually got into the Hall of Fame. But we
Incredible.
Can spend time on that.
An later. Honor to sit next to a Hall of Famer. Coming up, why is Kelvin Benjamin ripping Cam Newton? That's next on First Things First. Moving on to Kelvin Benjamin, the Bills wide receiver spent his first 3.5 seasons in the league in Carolina. And it turns out he wasn't very fond of his old quarterback, Cam Newton. Benjamin told The Athletic, "I should have just been drafted by somebody else. I should have never went to Carolina. It was a bad fit from the get-go. If you would have put me with any other quarterback, let's be real, any other accurate quarterback like Rodgers or Eli Manning or Big Ben, anybody. Quarterbacks with knowledge that know how to place a ball and give you a better chance to catch the ball. It just felt like I wasn't in that position." Nick, are you surprised by Benjamin's comments about Cam?
I'm surprised about them for a number of levels. One is, just prior to giving these comments, Kelvin Benjamin got into a whole rift with some local media in Buffalo because the Bills had been ranked, I think by Pro Football Focus, the worst wide receiver group in the league. And he gave a whole thing about how this is how we feed our families, just a game to you guys. You guys just always want to rip us. And then he goes out and rips a former teammate. And I'm also surprised because he says, if I would have been drafted by anybody else, he might have gotten a better quarterback. There are more quarterbacks in the league that are worse than Cam than better than Cam. So, I mean, I don't know. It's a less than 50% chance he would have had a better quarterback. But there's a 100% chance that if Carolina didn't draft him, he wouldn't have been a first rounder. I mean, he was falling out of the first round. It was a reach by Carolina because they wanted a tall wide receiver for Cam who tends to throw high. Like, listen, Cam has a lot of flaws as a passer. Accuracy and fundamentals are the highest on the list. But it's an odd thing for a guy who's trying to prove himself in this league to be taking shots at his former teammates, and his head coach in Buffalo didn't seem to like these comments either.
No, I talked to Sean McDermott. He was at the Hall of Fame ceremony, so I did talk to him not only about their young quarterback and Josh Allen, but some of the things that were going on there. No coach wants this, especially a wide receiver talking about his past team. Now, the irony to it is they play Carolina this week, and the coach wants everyone to be focused. So that's one of the reasons why the Cam Newton discussion came up. But if you're a football fan, if you just get beyond Kelvin Benjamin and Cam Newton, the truth of the matter is Kelvin Benjamin's saying the same thing that a lot of other people have said before. Now, you might not like Kelvin Benjamin. You might think there's wide receivers that are better. There are, but there is a lot of truth to what Cam and his inability to be consistent as a quarterback. Why should Cam ever be on the list with a guy like DeShone Kizer? Because that's the list that he was on last year. Now, you'll also be like, well, why is Cam on the list with Tom Brady, Alex Smith? Because he's on that list, too, as far as quarterbacks that did positive things. So, Cam, it's either really, really good or really, really bad. And what Kelvin Benjamin said is true. Cam is not the smartest quarterback as far as reading coverages. He is not the best as far as placing the ball. He does have problems as far as accuracy throwing the football. So if you can just get beyond the messenger, people have been saying this about Cam Newton for a long, long time. I've been saying this about Cam Newton for a long time. He should be better with the football. He should be a more accurate quarterback. At this point in his career, he should do a lot of the smaller things a lot better than what he's doing as far as recognizing coverage, where he's going to put the ball, and the variance of his throws. Cam typically always has a fastball. At this point, he should have developed throwing the football some different ways and throwing to different receivers.
And I don't necessarily disagree with the message. I just think it is an odd messenger. And I understand your point is we got to separate the message from the messenger. But what's also true is Sarah pointed this out before the show today. I mean, the other thing about Kelvin Benjamin is this team that spent a first-round pick on him, reached for him in the first round, was markedly better from a win-loss perspective without him than with him, because he missed that entire 15-1 MVP season, and then once they traded him last year, they went on a bit of a run. They were 21-3 the last 4 years with him, and 21-3 without him, pardon me, and 18-21-1 with him. So it is an odd messenger. As far as Cam, like, this is a huge year for Cam Newton. Last playoff game that he won, or the Panthers won, was the great game against Arizona. They blew out the Cardinals to go to the Super Bowl. That was a couple years ago. And Cam, as you mentioned it last year, he was feast or famine at the highest of levels. Now, he played really well in the playoff game, just didn't play well enough, or the team didn't play well enough to beat Drew Brees and the Saints, who played outstanding. But Cam was league MVP in 2015. He was bad in 2016. He had bad stats, but the team won a bunch last year. This is a very important year for Cam Newton, and so all of the things Kelvin Benjamin's talking about, I think, are accurate. They're just maybe a little hyperbolic as far as give me any other quarterback, give me Eli Manning. I don't necessarily buy that stuff.
Right. The truth of the matter is both of them should be a lot better. Kelvin should be a lot better. He should be able to have more of a diversification of routes that he can run. It doesn't make sense for a young wide receiver to be consistently out of shape the way Kelvin Benjamin has been, not only in pro football. When he went to Florida State, they had problems with how his weight was going to be and some other things off the field. So both players should be better than what they are. Now, you might not like Benjamin, but Cam Newton should be better. All right, he has the type of talent because he is a superstar in this league. Now, is that just because of name or ability, or is it based on the performance on the field? We typically don't have superstar players like Cam who are as inconsistent as him. And as you mentioned, it's a big year for Cam. Ownership there. They're under new ownership. Jerry Richardson, the team, he's sold the team. So the management there, how are they going to support Cam? And a lot of that, they got a new offensive coordinator in North Turner. What's his influence on Cam? Because I don't believe that Cam Newton, the Mike Shula, the system they used to run, it was very, very successful. And they got good numbers, but it's not the most productive system for a pure throwing quarterback the way Cam should be at this point.
Will that help the completion percentage? A change in the scheme, a change with Norv Turner coming in and things he can do, or is it more on Cam and how he needs to fundamentally get
better? I'm concerned about how much better Cam can get. It looks like Cam should be better as a passer, but North Turner's one of the best teachers of quarterbacks that we've had in the league for a long, long time. If Cam doesn't show that improvement, it won't be because of the coaching, the wide receivers. It will be because of the quarterback.
Do you think Cam realizes that he needs to make this jump? Do you think he's...
I don't like to read people's mind as far as are they awake? Are they self-aware? Typically, when I say things about Cam, Cam is concerned about his wardrobe, his hat selection after the game. There's other things that he should be working on, and accuracy should be number one.
And for what we will see going into this year with the new offensive coordinator, and by the way, they lost Andrew Norwell, one of the best guards in football, to Jacksonville. Their right tackle, just while we were off last week, he went down with an injury. So offensive line's already a little depleted. What we're going to see is if Cam believes he needs to make some fundamental changes in order to get back to the statistical form of 2015, or if that 2015 season will end up being something of an albatross around his neck, where he always looks back and says, I won the damn league MVP playing the way I've always played. Why would I change anything?
Yeah, I'm in what's going to happen is door number two, because I think that one MVP season is he will not get to that height again.
All right, coming up, is there a silver lining to Johnny Manziel's rough start in the CFL? That is next on First Things First. Moving on to the NBA, the Rockets might be adding another three-point shooter. According to reports, Houston has considered trying to trade for J.R. Smith. CC, would this be a good move for the Rockets?
Dale Murray, call me, man. What's your boy's name?
You got it. Daryl Moore.
Call me, man, because y'all going to need a team psychologist.
Oh, that's...
Okay? Like, if you're going to sign him, You need to call me, man.
Are you going to refer him to a psychologist, or you're going to be the psychologist?
No, no, I can't help him. JR, I mean, I had a heart-to-heart with JR last year. Courtside, JR, look at me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Get your mind right. Mm-hmm. I need to see your eyes not so glassy, son. Let's go.
All is true. And Jared's response was, where's Nick?
Yeah,
he's nicer to me.
I was like, man, he's walking with his wife. Man, they went to get a snack.
All that happened.
Yeah,
that's all right, true. Listen. JR, the reason you would bring him in is because you've seen him in the finals against the Warriors be a competent player. The reason you wouldn't bring him in is you've seen him at all in the last two regular seasons, and he's been brutal the last two regular seasons. This guy, people don't think it. I mean, I believe he's going into year 15. He's not a young player. If they can get him for, I don't know who they'd trade for it. I would be surprised. I know CC's not a surprise business.
I know you're a little new to this. Be careful asking Nick about Cam Newton and JR.
That's
be careful.
Oh.
I'm a truth teller, see.
I didn't know that.
I'm nothing but
not
a truth
for
teller.
Not for them
two. After the NFL.
No truth.
The Browns traded 2016 first round pick Corey Coleman to the Bills. They'll get a draft pick from Buffalo in exchange for the wide receiver. CC, what does this mean for the Browns receiving core?
Well, I'm gonna take Browns fans back, okay? That means that, first of all, they think that they have enough wide receiver, but Browns fans, the Carson Wentz trade that they made, Corey Coleman was the first pick that they made with the picks that they
made.
So now they're giving up on him. He's had 100-yard game as an NFL receiver. That was his second game in the league. So he's a small, undersized guy, supposed to be a speed guy. I think only a slot receiver. He does complement Kelvin Benjamin's inability to be able to get deep, though.
All right, from the Browns, though, since the new CBA came in, nothing has been more valuable to teams than those first-round picks because the rookie contract is so much lower than it used to be. You have the fifth-year option. That started in 2011. 2011 to 2016, every one of their first-round picks is gone. None of them made it to the fifth-year option.
Yeah.
So, like, the Browns, that's how you become the Browns. That's how you continue being the Browns. It's not only they had more first-round picks than most teams because they did do some trades, but they also had higher first-round picks than just about anybody. They're all gone. And so, I mean, that's how the Browns are the Browns.
I saw a lot of kids in Canton with Browns jersey on, so your future's bright.
Speaking of a former Brown, Johnny Manziel's CFL debut did not go as planned. Ooh. Through four interceptions as the Alouettes were blown out 50-11 by his former team, the Hamilton Tiger Cats. CC, what do you make of Manziel's performance?
Well, pro football's tough. I've been telling Nick I thought he would struggle even in the CFL. The coverages are very complicated. There are 12 guys on the field, and there's a lot of pressure on the offense because you only have really two downs to convert because it's a three-down league. So I'm not surprised that he struggled. Also, he has less support from an offensive line and a wide receiver skill standpoint than any of the other teams in the CFL. So I follow the CFL. My son is a star in the CFL. So I'm not surprised that he struggled. Like, you can't think that his career is over because he had one bad game. But this is the worst team in the CFL, and him trying to guide them to wins is going to be difficult.
Listen, it's one of the reasons they had an open quarterback spot was because the team is so under-talented. And I'm not, my son does not play in the CFL, so I've not followed it for years the way Chris has. But since Chris and I have become close, I've started to follow Saskatchewan, and therefore you follow the rest of the league. So I had an idea of what Johnny was walking into. I didn't see four interceptions coming, though. Like, there's playing well, there's playing okay, they're struggling, and then there's four interceptions in your first game of pro football in years.
Well, this is the thing. After you get off to a bad start, they can't protect you. You can't run the ball and just run it up and then punt. Like, it's a two down, first, second down, and if you try to run on first, you don't get yards. You got to chuck the ball on second. So they can, the system kind of forced him into multiple interceptions after the horrific start.
But here's the other reason why I think this is noteworthy. I think a lot of people have thought, all right, if Johnny can just show that he's healthy as far as off the field, then the NFL will come calling again to give him another try. There is an element to Johnny Manziel totally removed from the addiction issues, totally removed from the off-the-field stuff, where smart people have wondered, wait, is this guy, was he ever going to be good enough to be an NFL-caliber starting quarterback? And now that you're Johnny's age, plus the baggage that comes along with him, the idea that you would bring him in to be your third string or backup doesn't make a ton of sense. So the reason it's noteworthy is even all the extenuating circumstances see laid out, Like, if you are, he needs to play great at the CFL level to have a shot to get to an NFL team again. Right now, it's a small sample size as it gets. Like, he had as bad of a start as you can have.
Yeah, Johnny, I think it's more to that. People saying, oh, it's about, you know, going to work on time, being dependable. We haven't seen Johnny play well in professional football. This is what happens to Heisman Trophy winners. They come to pro football and they get crushed. So me thinking that Johnny, if he was going to be successful in the CFL, would lead to an NFL, no, I didn't think that. The CFL is very, very difficult. So this could be Johnny's home compared to using this as a springboard to the NFL.
Okay, we're going to move on to college football and Ohio State, where Urban Meyer remains on administrative leave after questions arose about his handling of domestic violence allegations against one of his assistant coaches back in 2015. Ohio State said in a statement Sunday that the Meyer investigation will come to a close within 14 days. CeCe, what do you make of this situation?
Well, the Urban Meyer that I know would have responded differently, especially to the press conference, because regardless of some of the horrific news that Urban has been involved with as a coach, I've seen him always try to do the right thing and tell the truth. So that part, as far as the press conference at the Big Ten, that was very, very poor on his behalf of not telling the truth. And typically in things like this, trying to hide something and not telling the truth, those are the things going to hurt you. I like the fact that the university immediately suspended him once they heard about that. And then Urban has since apologized, because when you are a leader and you don't know if someone's going to tell you the truth, that becomes a hard thing to continue to lead. So I don't know what's going to happen with the investigation. I think that if you look at our history, as far as Jim Tressel and some other things that have happened with the university, I think that they will move fast on this. But I have heard from some of the, because I do have kids on Ohio State's roster that I'm very, very close with, and their parents have gotten encouraging messages from Urban. Now, I personally have not talked to Urban yet. I have a couple messages in to him, you know, trying to support him and his family, because I still believe in Urban Meyer. He's a good friend of mine, and he's a good man. But good men make bad decisions in critical times, and that was a bad decision that he made, not revealing that he was familiar with Zach and what the information about Zach's past.
So I have two major takeaways on this, and they're kind of more big picture, but from reading the Brett McMurphy story that he posted on his Facebook page, which was very well reported. One is, in domestic violence situations, and again, it should be clear, I know Urban Meyer's the face of this, but Urban Meyer's, of course, not the person accused of the domestic violence, wasn't the person fired for the domestic violence. That was assistant coach Zach Smith. In domestic violence situations, men always have the power. And I don't just mean the alleged perpetrator or the perpetrator. It's typically men around that person, either friends or colleagues or people. It's typically men that have the power to impact the perpetrator or alleged perpetrator's life in a negative way that might actually have real consequences that the victim cannot. Because we know, why don't women leave? Well, the number one time a woman is most likely to be killed in a domestic violence situation is trying to leave the relationship. We know how, or we should know, how dangerous those situations are. And a lot of times, the women involved, they think, well, this man does support the family. If I go to the authorities, is he going to lose his job? What about the kids? Like, it's the hardest person's on is obviously for the women. But my other major takeaway is just us in the media and how we talk about these things. And we do a bad job on focusing on, we focus on the more famous person. This is, listen, what Urban Meyer did at Media Day was wrong. Lying was wrong. You can make a strong argument that Urban Meyer not firing Zach Smith almost a decade ago when the allegations first came about was wrong. But Urban Meyer is not the most wrong person here. Zach Smith is. And I saw a similar thing happen with the Joe Paterno scandal. That was the Jerry Sandusky scandal. And I'm not alleviating any type of, I'm not saying Joe Paterno didn't do anything wrong, but we, because nobody knows who Zach Smith is. You do see, like, the, you know what I mean? But The average, the person watching the show, just an assistant coach at Ohio State. And the further we get away from the actual perpetrator, the further we get away from the victim. And whether it's Jerry Sandusky and those poor kids, and we focus on Paterno, and are they taking down a statue, or Urban Meyer and this, and then we're removing it from Courtney Smith, the alleged victim, the person that I believe was an actual, was a true repeated victim. And so I understand why we talk about the more famous person. I get it, and I understand what's the strong take on Zach Smith. You shouldn't, like, I get it. There's not going to be a debate there. But it, to me, it does a disservice to the people most adversely affected. Because the people most adversely affected by this, is not, what happens to Urban Meyer does not impact them truly one way or the other.
Chris, you bring up the players. What's the challenge during these times for the players, for the team, for the kids?
The challenge right now is to stay focused. Even though your leader is under attack, how do I focus on what I'm going to do? They have a very, very good football team. They have a young quarterback, and trying to transition to him taking over the program, that's the hard thing, because typically you come to a university, you say, I come there for the university, I come for the education, I come for the program, but typically you come there also because the personality of the head coach. So it's hard to be able to separate that in a young person's life. They just started practice on Saturday, getting ready for the upcoming season, which they consider it to be a big season for them. So for young people, it's really, really hard for them to be able to focus on what's real and what's not real, and what about my future if they decide to remove him as the head coach.
Does this change the landscape at all of the Big Ten?
If Urban Meyer is not the head coach of Ohio State, they'll still be Ohio State. But we have seen repeatedly the force of nature that major college football coaches are. Like, Alabama was still Alabama, but it kind of wasn't until Nick Saban got there. Like, it had been before, and then it wasn't for a long time. Like, the Ohio State had, it had a great era under Earl Bruce. It had kind of a drier time, a great era under Jim Tressel, and they needed Urban Meyer. Like, so yes, I mean, it would to me.
Ohio State for the last 100 years has produced first rounders regardless of who the coach was. A variety of top great names have been the head coach. Most of them have been fired as the head coach. So we're going to get blue chip players because it's Ohio State, all right? He was able to follow up the great legacy of Jim Tressel with a national championship. So when you look at that, two out of the last five after Woody, they won national championships. So the players are going to be there. We got the facilities, got the education, you got the conference, you got the TV market. So the Buckeyes, as I tell Nick all the time, we've been good in football for over 100 years, and it's beyond the coach.
More First Things First coming up after this. Welcome back to First Things First. Super Bowl champ Chris Canty joining us.
Hey, now.
What up, big man? Appreciate your help last week.
I've been trying to ask him to wear
his vacation, got your tan on.
Man,
I ain't even mad at you.
Is that a thing?
No, you can't force them. Typically, the rings are so big, and you worry about something happening to it. So, no, you can't force them. There are big days, though, he will decide to wear it. Like, it's just not today.
He wore it once last week, and I thought it was a daily thing.
Because I was doing my daily radio show from Giants training camp on last Monday.
Humpty and Canty,
97 ESPN, shameless plug.
Yeah.
No.
That was an appropriate time to wear it. Absolutely. Beginning of the season, you know. Yeah. You break it out around playoff time as we gear up for the Super Bowl, you know.
Right. Just make sure just we put it on the intro, Super Bowl champ. That's what's important.
I like it. Well, speaking of the Giants, let's talk about Odell Beckham Jr. He spoke with reporters over the weekend, seeming optimistic about getting a contract extension, saying, quote, it will work itself out. Another thing Beckham is optimistic about is the Giants' season, saying he wants to hang a banner. Chris Canty, what has to happen for Odell Beckham Jr. and the Giants to contend for a Super Bowl?
Well, it's going to have to be one of the more explosive offenses in the NFL. And when I say that, I'm talking about an offense that's going to score north of 24 points a game. It's going to have to be a top five scoring offense, because when you look at everything they have invested on the offensive side of the ball in draft capital and salaries, you recognize that those guys are going to have to be the catalyst for the Giants to be competitive this season. I like some of the pieces that they have on the defensive side of the ball, being able to trade for Alec Ogletree this offseason and seeing what they did with Olivier Vernon, bringing him in a few years ago, along with Snacks Harrison and Janoris Jenkins. They have some playmakers on that side of the ball, but they don't have a ton of depth. When you look at every single level of that defense, you see that there's not a lot of guys on that second unit that are proven commodities in our league. So ultimately, it's going to have to be the offense being able to dominate, being able to score a lot of points, dictate the game, control time of possession, and then that defense, they're going to have to be complimentary.
All right, so for the Giants to contend for a Super Bowl, I think people would expect me to talk about Eli, to bang on Eli Manning, because I don't think Eli Manning is a top flight or close to a quarterback.
You got it in
but
there,
let's
though.
Just... Yeah, hey, Ronnie,
right.
But hold on.
Because you could have just continued just saying whatever else you were going to say.
I was explaining for our new viewers, why would they expect Nick to bang on Eli Manning? Well, why? Because that's why. However...
Because he thinks Eli's garbage.
I didn't say, see, now you got that in there. I didn't say, I wouldn't go quite that far. But let's just say Eli's good. Let's just say Eli plays really well this year. What do they still need to then contend for a Super Bowl, right? To be at that portion of the league. I need Olivier Vernon to play the way I think he's capable of playing. I know the Giants think he's capable of playing, and that's not a 10-sack guy. That's a contend for the sack championship type of guy. I need the secondary to be far better than it was last year. It's not just first-round picks back there, but high-priced free agents they've gone out and gotten. Like, I need the – you're saying they have to do it by scoring 24 points a game. I don't necessarily – I'm not saying you're wrong, but with the money they spent a couple off seasons ago, and I know JPP's gone now, and the draft capital they've spent on the back end of that secondary, why can't the defense be a major reason that they would be a really good team? Why can't this be a team – I think it would have to be a team that the defense is one of their strong points if they're going to be – not only compete in the NFC East, compete in the NFC, but to compete for a Super Bowl.
Well, I'll say this. They had one of the worst run defenses in the league, and I'm not going to say that they got better by trading away JPP. Now, they say that might have been a chemistry thing, but you know, when you look at that defensive front, you got to have guys that can stop the run, that can allow mm-hmm. the linebackers to run and hit and flow over the top. They don't have those guys outside of Snacks Harrison. Yeah. Dalvin Tomlinson, we saw some flashes, but he wasn't very consistent last year. So you're looking at that. You look at Olivier Vernon, he's a proven commodity as a pass rusher, even though he's not a 15, 20 sack guy. He's always around 10 to 12 sacks. The only problem is, who's the guy that's going to be rushing the passer opposite of him? Right. You don't have that guy. So a lot of offenses are going to game plan and try to scheme Olivier Vernon out of being able to be a factor in terms of generating the pass rush. So when I see teams that are contending for championships on the defensive side of the ball, they usually have three or four guys that can consistently win one-on-ones and get after the quarterback. And the Giants just don't have that. I like Connor Barwin, but he's seen better days. I mean, he's a guy that's a piece, but he's not the answer. So the Giants are going to need one of those young guys, whether it's Romeo Okwara, Lorenzo Carter, Kareem Martin, somebody to step up and do something that we haven't seen. I know what I'm getting from Olivier Vernon. I just don't know what I'm getting from the other group of pass rushers, and thereby I don't know what kind of defense you're going to have.
Yeah, Canty, he brings up some great points as far as the Giants and when the Giants have been good. In our conversations, man, there's been a theme with this franchise. I love this franchise. They do things the right way. They're very, very classy. But when they have won at a high level, it has never been with the offense scoring upwards of 24 points. All right? Not only just the weather, just the style. The Giants fans, that intensity for which they play with the physical approach. So now we're saying that, okay, they're going to be an offensive-dominated team in this NFC where we got a bunch of quarterbacks. Like, that can score points. So I think that's a problem. Now, from a personnel standpoint, let's just take a look. On the defensive side, you talked about up front and the linebacker core. Linebacker core is questionable, too. Can they cover? You know, can they come downhill and thump, take people out of their running game? But Eli Apple at the left corner spot is a huge question mark. Janoris Jenkins coming off an awful season, also coming off a bad offseason where his brother allegedly murdered another guy in his house. So I don't know where he's sleeping, but I can guarantee you trying to have your mind at rest as you approach this season to be a very, very important season for him. Now let's go on the offensive side of the ball. I'll stay with the same theme of their skilled guys. Cody Lattimore. You guys know who he is?
Denver Broncos draft.
Oh, yeah. He's scheduled to start opposite of Odell Beckham. Yep. Now, do I think he can have 60, 70 catches, 1,000-yard season? That's what you have to have opposite of a star like Odell. So he's a huge question mark, and Eric Flowers at that right tackle, he is not going nowhere. And like I tell people,
they keep trying to find places to hide him, CC. They keep trying.
When we used to have a scouting report for people like Eric Flowers, I used to let the guy know, man, our scouting department knows you. You can't hide. We know you can't play. They can't help you enough. And that's the story with Eric Flowers and his inability to be a quality offensive lineman. Now, I know he's not playing left tackle. Nate Solder will be playing the left tackle. But even at right tackle, we have so many premier rushers that play left end.
Listen, it's so tough. Like, there right now, there's a market inefficiency as far as there are so many more excellent pass rushers than there are excellent offensive linemen. Like, maybe that's about the college rules or just the athletes that are coming, whatever it is. It's hard to have enough offensive linemen in this league, and it seems like every team's got pass rushers. But on the offensive side, listen, bringing up the number two wide receiver is a very fair critique, and of course, Eric Flowers. But you look at, they spend the number two pick on a running back. They have Odell. I like Sterling Shepard as a slot guy. I think Evan Engram is poised to have a big year, even though he and Eli Apple just got kicked out of practice a couple days ago for getting into a little skirmish. And they spent the money on Nate Solder. They spent their next draft pick after Barkley on the left guard from UTEP, Will Hernandez.
Will Hernandez.
And so when we're talking about questions on offense, they have, to me, fewer, if you remove the quarterback, than the majority of other teams. Like, so I understand Canty's point as far as the offense you think has some of the personnel to be dynamic. I get that part of it. It's why I was focusing on the defense.
Well, I guess the way I was looking at it is, you tell me what type of football team you want to be by where you put your draft capital. And when you look at the high draft picks that Dave Gettleman and the pass regime have on the offensive side of the ball, you're saying these are our playmakers. So Odell Beckham Jr., first round draft pick. Saquon Barkley, second overall pick. Evan Engram, first round draft pick. Eli Manning, first round draft pick.
Even Eric Flowers.
Eric Flowers, first round draft pick. Nate Solder, even though you bought him over from a free agency from the Patriots, first round draft pick. You're telling me what you want. Sterling Shepard, second rounder. Will Hernandez, second rounder. You're telling me what you want to be when you invest on that side of the ball with those draft picks. So that's why I say that has to be the identity. And listen, we would say that we would be disappointed if Saquon Barkley, from a production standpoint, isn't a 1,500 yards from scrimmage, 15-plus touchdown guy, because that's what you're typically getting from a running back that you take in the top five. In the last two teams, in the last two drafts that have taken running backs in the top five, they ended up in the playoffs. So that's my expectations for the Giants. If they're going to do it, they have far more people to do it on the offensive side of the ball than the defensive side of the ball. That's why I say that's going to be their identity. That's why if they're going to be a postseason team, it's going to have to be an explosive unit.
Sarah, I believe you asked me an important question privately, is who is the head coach? Like, who is Pat Shurmur? Like, what is he going to do? Is he going to have an explosive offense? Or is he going to be like the guy in Cleveland who some people question, was he authoritative enough? Now, OBJ, he's already been associated with two coaches being fired. One being Tom Coughlin, who is a disciplinarian, and McAdoo, who was the coach last year. Him getting fired was definitely a reaction to Odell Beckham and him not being able to be on the same page. So, yes, the coach, huge question marks as far as him and his leadership.
All right, Chris Canty, you're going to stay right there for us. Coming up, why is a former teammate ripping Cam Newton? That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First with Chris Canty. Bills wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin spent his first 3.5 seasons in the league in Carolina, and turns out he wasn't very fond of his old quarterback, Cam Newton. Benjamin told The Athletic, "I should have just been drafted by somebody else. I should have never went to Carolina. It was a bad fit from the get-go. If you would have put me with any other quarterback, let's be real, any other accurate quarterback like Rodgers or Eli Manning or Big Ben, anybody, quarterbacks with knowledge that know how to place a ball and give you a better chance to catch the ball. It just felt like I wasn't in that position." Chris Canty, are you surprised by Benjamin's comments about Cam?
A little bit. And I'm not surprised by the comment itself. It seems like it's one of those Captain Obvious statements because it's true. I just wish that Kelvin Benjamin didn't say it. Now, part of the reason the Carolina Panthers drafted him in 2014 was because he had a wide catch radius, because you knew you had an inaccurate quarterback. Cam Newton is one of those guys that's so physically gifted that he doesn't necessarily pay attention to the fundamentals of the position. Footwork is not necessarily the best when it comes to being able to deliver the football, especially in the pocket. So, yeah, that's one of the things that we recognize, but Cam Newton, I don't think we can look at as just a prototypical pocket passer. He does so many other things from the quarterback position that correlate with winning, that translate to being able to compete at the highest level. You look at what he did in that MVP season that he had a few years back. I mean, he was just an explosive player, not just as a passer, but as a runner, a dual threat type of quarterback, and that translated into a lot of wins for the Carolina Panthers team. So, I mean, I understand where Kelvin Benjamin is taking it, but y'all did a lot of winning in Carolina when he was down there. So, I mean, you look at Cam Newton in the NFC South, a tough division. It's the only division in pro football that's got three MVP quarterbacks. You look at that, they were the only repeat winner in that division's history. I think they went back to back to back, and there was a span of 3 years where they won the NFC South three straight years. So, I mean, you can complain about Cam Newton not necessarily playing the quarterback position at the highest level, but he always gives you a chance to win.
But I am excited, though, because very rarely in sports do we get a true, like, test case of something someone says. Kelvin Benjamin says, put me with any other quarterback. Well, lucky you, we got you on a team with A.J. McCarron, Nate Peterman, and a rookie in Josh Allen, who, if he plays this year, he will be as raw as any rookie quarterback we've seen, even if you believe in Josh Allen long term. So let's see if that's true. Because even if you thought Kelvin Benjamin was disappointing in Carolina, last year in Carolina, he averaged 4 catches, 60 yards, 15 yards a catch, with a couple touchdowns in his half season there. In his half season in Buffalo, that was down to less than 3 catches a game. 36 yards a game, less than 14 yards per catch, with 1 touchdown his whole time there. So if it really was Cam, because I think some of his comments are accurate, I also think he's the worst messenger for this. Not only because you shouldn't take shots at a former teammate, but because what about Kelvin Benjamin's got a lot of wide receiver traits that are similar to Cam Newton's quarterback traits. Physically gifted, you know, almost oversized for the position, and has not made the most of it. Like, see, you're the route running expert. Like, would you say Kelvin Benjamin is running precise? If someone needs to be cut off at 8, he's cutting off at 8. He's got his hips turned in the right direction. Like,
no, sir.
Right. And so I feel like he is there's a little bit of projection in these comments, even if we all know, of course, Cam should be more accurate. Of course, his fundamentals, particularly his footwork, should be better. And too often he relies on the fact that he's one of the greatest athletes ever to play that position to get him out of trouble spots.
Last season, Cam Newton. Only DeShone Kizer had more games with a pass rating below 70. All right, DeShone Kizer, the Browns gave up on. It was a second-round pick. Shipped him off to Green Bay. And also on the other side, Alex Smith, Tom Brady are the only ones who had more games with Cam Newton, the passer rating over 120. Now, that's not the disparity that should you ever want. So Cam Newton and Kelvin Benjamin are a lot alike. Both of them have the potential to be all-pro, but neither one has made the type of adjustments that I think it takes to be great. Kelvin Benjamin is a wide receiver. He had the same problem in college, being overweight. He's a big body type. He's always going to be a big man. But as a wide receiver, it makes no sense to be out of shape and be a professional athlete. Now, he said he was going through a grieving phase as far as his mother this offseason, or the offseason that he had problems with Carolina 2 offseasons ago. That's no excuse for not being in shape, because even if you're going through some things traumatic in your life, it only takes 2 hours, hour and a half to get your workout in. You're supposed to be a professional. So Cam Newton and Benjamin have some of the same qualities. They should be better at this point in their career. Now, you might not like the messenger. Cam Newton should be a better quarterback. Kelvin Benjamin should be a better receiver. He is not better off with some other quarterback than he was with Cam. And he is getting ready to see that, man, there are the haves and the have-nots in the NFL. And he is getting ready to be thrown the ball by the have-nots and younger talent that is not proven. So the message is accurate. Cam Newton should be better. Now, you might not like the messenger, but the message is clear. Cam is a superstar, and he should play like it and have the consistency of a superstar.
Chris, what will help Cam get to that level? Will bringing in North Turner help him be more effective and more accurate with his passing? What will get him to play the way in which his God-given talents should have him playing at?
Well, Sarah, if North Turner can't fix him, then nobody can fix him. I mean, CeCe, you know that better than anybody. Yeah. North Turner has been able to work with a lot of different quarterbacks with a lot of different styles throughout the years, but he's always been able to make that translate into production. He's always had explosive offenses. So the Carolina Panthers bought him in with the idea that Cam Newton, if we're ever going to get the best out of his physical gifts, it's going to have to be this guy. And I think North Turner will be creative enough and play to Cam's skill sets. It's just a matter of, will Cam step up to the challenge and will he, you know, answer the bell when it comes to all the criticism that we've had with his fundamentals at the position?
What does North Turner do from an offensive standpoint? He loves to run the ball. He loves to be physical. So the match between him and Carolina is a good match. What does he do from a passing standpoint? He likes to protect the quarterback. All right, so he has good sound protection, but he likes to throw the ball deep down the field. That is Norv Turner. Cam Newton, that's not something that he can always do consistently without the play action. Can he throw the ball deep just off a straight drop back? That part right there is going to have to be proven.
Real quick on Kelvin Benjamin being out of shape, just because I know this is one of your pressure points. See, if you're a professional athlete, it's the offseason. What's the only thing you got to do during the day?
I ain't got to get up and run. That's all I got to do is get up and run.
And then the rest of the day, what
it's mine. I don't have no professors. I don't have no exams. I don't have no study hall.
Like, you ain't got to go clock in at some part-time job.
No.
So you got to set your alarm. You got to wake up.
You don't even have to set your alarm. You don't have to work out
whenever
morning.
You want to get up. Whenever you want to get up.
Man, you can work out whenever you want to. It's not that difficult.
CeCe does not like the pro athlete that is not in tip-top shape.
Well, it's like someone on this job, I don't like to read. It's going to be a problem. I mean, it's going to be a problem.
Chris, we're going to
work out for you.
We're going to see you a little bit later in the show. Coming up, how much did Terrell Owens miss out on by skipping Canton? That's next on First Things First. The Hall of Famer who wasn't in Canton, Terrell Owens, held his own ceremony in Chattanooga over the weekend. While many were critical of Owens' decision not to attend the Hall of Fame festivities, T.O. attempted to explain his decision.
So I want to address the elephant in the room. Many of you may be wondering why we're here instead of Canton. There's been a lot of speculation and false reports as to why I chose not to be there. I would like to set the record straight. It's not because how many times it took for me to be voted into the hall. It's about the mere fact that the sports writers are not in alignment with the mission and core values of the Hall of Fame. These writers disregarded the system, the criteria, and bylaws in which guys are inducted, and ultimately the true meaning of the Hall of Fame and what it represents. I wanted to take a stand so the next guy coming after me will not have to go through what I and others have gone through. Whether it's 3 years or 45 years, you should get what you rightfully earned.
CeCe, what did T.O. miss by not going to Canton?
Well, first, let me address what he said. As far as him feel like he's taking a stand for the Hall of Fame because the writers don't line up with the core values as far as what our core values are. There are commitment, integrity, courage, respect, and excellence. Those are the core values that I didn't know. I mean, I have those in my life, but I didn't know they were the core values of the Hall of Fame until when, Sarah? When I got in and Mean Joe Green and Lynn Swann and others begin to tell me about what our core values were. So there's so much that I learned about being in the hall since I got there that I think it's impossible to have the insight that Terrell is trying to give unless you've been in the hall or been with the Hall of Famers before.
It's impossible to have the insight on any organization. I don't care if it's the local Boy Scout troop, the NFL Hall of Fame, or a company. You can't claim to speak to or represent or preach about core values of an organization that you just became a part of. it's just naturally illogical. If we hired someone for this show and their first day here, he's like, let me tell you guys, he or she, about the core values of First Things First. Like, the hell are you talking about? Like, I knew you'd seize on that because it just seems like There's a time and a place, and there's people who are equipped to talk about things. I'm not saying T.O.'s not smart enough or wouldn't eventually be able to talk about these things, but how do you know about the core values of an institution in which, up until that moment, you were not a member?
And T.O. has verbalized, so he didn't tell the truth there. He's verbalized to Hall of Famers that if he had been selected in his first year or second year, and not being selected his third year when he was, but Randy Moss got in his first ballot, that affected him. So he's not even telling the truth. Like, tell the truth, all right? The reason why he was upset was like a lot of, I was upset. Like, a lot of other people were upset. Lynn Swann waited over 14 years to get in. So him even doing this is not going to write something that all Hall of Fames have. There's a wait. There's periods where guys should get in. They're not going to get in. So for him thinking that he changed the system, no, he didn't change the system to help out me and others. He didn't do that on our behalf. So that's not even being truthful or being the elephant in the room. Now, T.O., like, let's stop that. There's a reason why you did it, all right? And it's because the Hall of Fame didn't select you. And, like, tell the truth. And there's other things that you were worried about. When you're selected, typically the team that you're going in as hosts a party for you. And these parties go from anywhere from 100 up to $400,000. And they spend, I'm talking about, they have the best champagne, best decorations. All these things are right there at your party. No team said they were going to throw a party for them. San Francisco didn't. Dallas didn't. Philadelphia didn't. Cincinnati didn't. So he knew he was going to have some problems as far as his Hall of Fame, but talking to Emmett Smith and others there at the hall, that they would have done, or we would have done as a group, something to make sure that his celebration was on par with everyone else. Now, he's decided to forfeit all those things, but his family members and his friends, the overall experience of being in Canton on his weekend, that will never happen. Even one day, because he will come to the hall, okay? Because he will acknowledge and come to the hall one day. But that weekend for his people that were significant in him getting there, it won't be a weekend for them.
And the other thing, when you're talking about tell the truth, like, it also should be noted that he said, I'm not certain if it was in his speech or previous, but he mentioned that the hall was essentially being petty and that they wouldn't send him his jacket, that he had to go send someone to go get his jacket for him. And when I initially heard those comments, I'm like, they wouldn't send him his jacket. And then I found out the actual circumstances. When does everyone get their jacket, see?
On Friday night. We have an official ceremony where your presenter presents you for the first time with your tailor-made jacket.
So for Ray Lewis, for Randy Moss, for Brian Dawkins, the first time they got to put that jacket on was Friday night.
Friday night. And Dave Baker, who is our leader, decided that he would not allow them to see his jacket before the other Hall of Famers saw their jacket.
Well, that's the key. Is the T.O., correct me if I'm getting this wrong, T.O. was told, listen, we can send it to you via FedEx Friday night.
Yep.
Or on Friday night, you or an emissary, you can send someone on Friday to get it. What we're not going to have is the guy who's not showing up get his jacket before Brian Urlacher.
The funny thing about
Ray Lewis,
the person that that he sent to get his jacket, this guy picks up the jacket. He goes to Ray Lewis's party. Me and Sue were partying with Ray Lewis. He had an amazing party. Mm-hmm. Man, the Ravens, they know how to throw a party. They had some good food, drink. His buddy, T.O.'s buddy, was at the party. He couldn't fly out to the next day, flew to Atlanta, and drove to Tennessee with the jacket. So, man, you try not to be part of the Hall of Fame, but you got to be a part of it to be able to get your jacket. And his friend was able to experience what one of these parties is like.
So I want to ask you another question, because the Ray Nitschke luncheon, this is, if people don't know what it is, you've told me a lot about it. Nobody's allowed into this luncheon except for the living Hall of Famers and that class of soon-to-be Hall of Famers and their presenters, correct?
Yes.
That's it. There's no media there. It's not. Sue couldn't go.
No.
Like, it's just you guys. And that luncheon is known for a lot of things, but at times, I don't want to say airing of grievances, but if there's things that need to be addressed amongst that group of guys, they are addressed there because there's almost an unspoken code. We're not going to speak bad of Hall of Famers up publicly, right? Like, but if someone thinks a Hall of Famer's acting a fool, that's a time where maybe a veteran Hall of Famer might say something to him. The T.O. situation was a big topic at that luncheon, correct?
Yes.
And is there, do you think there will be some type of protocol in place moving forward to try to prevent this?
Or is it considered such a one-off that you wouldn't need a protocol?
Well, one thing is you don't want to be caught by surprise. So will someone else follow what T.O. did? It was for us to have the discussion. Daryl Green brought it up. Other Hall of Famers, Michael Irvin, Charles Haley, they are very emphatic about making sure that T.O. is represented in the room, which he was represented. Joe Namath had some compelling things to say about what a man is going through and walking in his shoes and understanding that, or just being empathetic enough to know that he's going through something different and respecting that whole process. But I thought the Hall of Famers, we had a great spirited conversation about what we're going to do moving forward. We believe in Dave Baker and the things that they have done, even in this situation. But someone thinking that they're going to boycott the Hall of Fame and it's going to change our system of how we're doing things, they are wrong. And for T.O. to think him not being there changed something this weekend, it didn't. And it won't going forward.
He was the one who missed out. Coming up, Jalen Hurts speaks out on Alabama's quarterback controversy. You can hear it from him next on First Things First. NFL now. The Eagles locked up their head coach and general manager. Both Doug Peterson and Howie Roseman were given contracts through the 2022 season. CC, was this a smart move?
It's a smart move. This franchise is one of the successful franchises in the league, not just because they won the Super Bowl last year, but you look at off the field, what they've done with their stadium, the overall revenue, the players that they've had drafted and signed to long-term contracts, the winning teams, this is stuff that they do, stuff that you don't have to worry. Howie Roseman, executive of the year. Doug Peterson, based on what he did, backup quarterback, coach of the year with the postseason included. So, yeah, let's get them locked up. And there's no salary cap for the front office or the coaches. Let's get them paid.
I happen to think Howie Roseman is an excellent general manager. I think Doug Peterson, early returns are really good, but yes. I'll wait and see before I do a full evaluation of him. But for any team, let's say they were both just mediocre. Having continuity is so important. So if you have continuity and they're both really good and they work together, it's a huge edge. There's no teams ever that are successful with a constant turnover at either of these
spots. You have to give Jeffrey Lurie credit, the owner there, because he lost his job when Chip Kelly took all the power.
Roseman
and then
did.
Yeah, Howie lost his job, and then they gave him the power back, and he's been even more successful his second time around.
And finally, Alabama is currently number one in the polls, but still doesn't know who their starting quarterback will be. Jalen Hurts was a starter until halftime of the national championship game when he was benched for freshman Tua Tagovailoa. Hurts spoke out about the quarterback situation. Take a listen.
I'm not saying anything. So for me, when I look at the things that are being said and I'm not looking for it, it just comes to me. And when I see that those things are being said, I'm like, no, that's silly because – you know, he said this, he said that, maybe Coach Saban said this, whoever said whatever, what did Jalen say? Not a thing. No one came up to me the whole spring, coaches included. No one asked me how I felt. No one asked me what was on my mind. No one asked me, you know, how I felt about the things that were going on. Nobody asked me what my future entailed, and that's that. So now it's like when we try and kind of handle the situation now, it's kind of late. It's too late. You know, the narrative has already been created.
CeCe, what do you make of Jalen Hurts' comments?
Well, first you have to know how Nick Saban runs his team. He doesn't allow his coaches to interview with the media, and that's the reason why you don't hear a lot of sound bites. They're players are screened. Who's going to be interviewed, what they're going to wear, and typically they all try to keep the same theme. You don't hear Alabama player talking about, I'm not happy. You don't hear him talking about, it's too late to talk about that. But Jalen Hurts, he's got some real issues.
Yeah.
He's been a starting quarterback, led them, man, down the field, many, many a drives. They've been successful. But he's got someone that's better than him at throwing the football and has a brighter future than him. So I told Nick this in the spring. He should leave. He's not going to be the starting. Nick Saban is going to keep him there as long as he can so he can have the benefit of having two starting quarterbacks because he doesn't want to rely on the young kid and be able to rely on his arm. Nick Saban tries to keep as many good football players as he can there because it helps his chances. Nick Saban is going to do what's best for Alabama, not what's best for Jalen. And Jalen somehow has been duped into thinking coming back to Alabama is the best thing for him. It's going to be a long year of a lot of tough questions.
Yeah, and I feel like I understand Nick Saban's paid by the University of Alabama very handsomely. I understand his number one responsibility is to the university. But there's got to be, there should be, a human level of responsibility to the young man. He knows Jalen Hurts isn't a pro. Certainly not a quarterback, maybe a different position, but he's probably not a pro anywhere. He only has so many football games left in his career to have the honest conversation of, listen, if you want to stay, we'd love to have you. And you could beat out Tua. And if there's an injury, obviously you're our guy. Mm-hmm. But if you want to be the unquestioned starting quarterback somewhere, we'll grant you your free release and go. You helped us get to two national championship games. You have as good of a record as damn near any quarterback over 2 years in the history of college football. I feel like they owe that to him.
Well, the thing, too, I know Nick Saban is doing this. Jalen is on, he's on course to graduate, I think, in December. In only 3 years there in a couple summers. So what Nick is probably telling him is, you need to stay here. You're a big part of what we're going to do. We don't know who the quarterback's going to be. Both of you are going to play, but you're going to graduate, son. And that's something I promised your family. And that's something you're going to be able to take the rest of your life, which is more important than playing football. And if that's the case, then he would be able to leave next year and not be penalized as a graduate transfer and play immediately. So that is the one benefit to him staying at Alabama, graduating early and then transferring next year where he wouldn't be restricted.
All right, let's move on to LeBron James. Less than a week after opening his I Promise public school in Akron, LeBron had his own intelligence questioned by President Trump. Trump tweeted Friday night, LeBron James was just interviewed by the dumbest man on television, Don Lemon. He made LeBron look smart, which isn't easy to do. I like Mike. Nick, what was your reaction to this?
So I deleted Twitter off my phone this past week. It was kind of an agreement I made with my wife while we were out of town on vacation with the family. So when I reinstalled
it. You mean you didn't think of that yourself?
No.
Oh,
no.
Staff, we kind of figured what happened.
It was, when I say an agreement, maybe edict is the better way to put it. But whatever it was, I came to a negotiation with my wife. I was going to delete Twitter. And so I reinstalled it Sunday morning. And before I even scroll Twitter, I check some of my mentions, and I'm tagged in all these tweets with President Trump, like people tweeting to me. And I'm like, so what happened? And I look and I see it. All right, listen, I can't speak to who's smarter between President Trump and LeBron James. I don't know how you tell that. Obviously the president is more educated. He went to Wharton Business School, and LeBron never went to college. If you're just judging based on Twitter syntax, I think that's a check in LeBron's column as opposed to the president's column, but I don't know who's smarter. But I do know that both these men are role models. And I do know if you're a celebrity, if you're the president of the United States, if you're a big-time pro athlete, you're a role model. Chris, you say this all the time. Whether you want to be or not, you are a role model. And so while I can't speak to who's smarter, I can speak to, for my kids, who I think has exhibited publicly the display of being a better role model. And we can go down the list. You want to talk about husband, like, LeBron's married to his high school sweetheart. I think we know the president's history there. Like, if you want to talk about, like, overcoming odds, LeBron moved around so much when he was growing up. In fourth grade, he almost didn't complete the year because they didn't have a couch to sleep on or a consistent living experience. And president, I think, was given a few million dollars to start his first business by his father. Speaking of fathers, like, you guys can judge how good of a father the president is by his own book, by his own writing about raising the kids is for the wife. LeBron seems very deeply involved in the lives of all three of his kids. And then on this thing, charity. Like, I read David Fahrenthold in the Washington Post, Pulitzer Prize winner, talked. I mean, he scoured the earth for personal charitable donations the president has made, and I think won a Pulitzer writing about it. LeBron, I mean, this is just part of a $41 million project out of his own pocket that is going to send up to 1,000 kids to college tuition free. This is going to open the doors for 240 kids in Akron, third and fourth graders. His I Promise School, free tuition, free uniforms, free bike and helmet, food pantry, help for the parents to get a GED or job placement if they need it. Like, LeBron James is the sterling example of the American dream.
no matter where you stand on the president, no matter where you stand on the man's intelligence, he is the sterling example of the American dream. And it's just disappointing that on this, like, someone would take a shot. It's unimpeachably great what LeBron is doing in the Akron community. And it just is just disappointing, man.
We have a tremendous legacy in sports as being role models. I hope that LeBron, because he's actually added to that legacy, that other great players, Kareem, Jim Brown, and other things that they've stood for throughout their life. I'm glad to see professional athletes doing positive things in their community. I'm not going to get into who made comments about what, but being from the state of Ohio, and someone's going to start a school that I would have been one of these kids. Like, I went to school hungry so many days. It's hard to concentrate. People think about education, oh, man, we need better schools. We need, what difference does it make if you're teaching better if the kids are hungry? And then there's a thing with poverty that not being able to have new clothes to wear or fresh clothes, it's always an identity. I'm wearing my brother's pants and I'm wearing one of his shirts to try to make people think I have more clothes. There's some simple things that LeBron did here that only being poor do you know and do you understand. And being from Ohio, I'm very, very proud of what LeBron has done and a lot of other athletes of what they're doing. I encourage athletes to keep making a difference where they can and continue having an impact regardless of what the noise might be and regardless of where that noise comes from. It's always the right time to do the right thing. And LeBron James, there's no athlete you can compare as far as what he's doing in the community that he was a part of, that he won't let these kids, he won't let them fail. He will give them the opportunity. And you consider that this other person has the ability every day to make changes in people's lives, but he decides not to, but to criticize someone who has decided with his own money that he's going to do things. So if you're out there doing positive things like LeBron James, keep doing positive things.
And when we say, talk about LeBron as a role model, it's, he has not just been a role model for young people. He's been a role model for his colleagues. And the way, for good or for bad, Allen Iverson was almost a role model for how it was okay to dress in the NBA or not. Like, the standard bearer of the league has an added responsibility. And LeBron, what we've seen from other guys really embracing, there obviously always were athlete charities and athlete foundations, and some were great, some were just the names on something. And they, and I feel like LeBron has inspired to a degree some other NBA players to not just have their name on a foundation, but to be actively involved. I've said repeatedly, the things Kevin Durant is doing in the Bay Area charitably are remarkable, only in that they're not remarkable, because we now, it's like a lot of these guys are doing it. And the type of person LeBron's been as a child star, you can go down the list of child stars who have a very public meltdown at some point. They're famous too early, they are rich too early, they don't deal with it well. LeBron's never been in trouble. His biggest mistake raised $3 million for charity in the decision. And listen, people want to argue the LeBron versus MJ or the guy ain't clutch or whatever it is. That's all fair game. Attacking the guy on this day about this is so, to me, just revolting that,
I don't know how you can be surprised or disappointed, though. Like, how can you be surprised? How can you be disappointed? Disappointment comes from expectations. So, for one, you got the wrong expectations. But I'm glad the greatest basketball player ever, level set. At least he said something this time.
Oh, you got to get it at the end.
He said something this time.
Kind of.
I love it. Coming up, is Andrew Luck going to be one of the greatest players ever? Find out who thinks so. That's next on First Things First. Moving on to Andrew Luck. The Colts have high hopes for their quarterback after he missed all of last season with a shoulder injury. Team owner Jim Irsay had especially high praise for the former number one overall pick. He said Luck, quote, can be one of the greatest players to play the game. So no pressure. Chris, are expectations too high for Luck considering that he hasn't played since 2016?
No, I think the expectations for Andrew Luck are right where they should be. He's a former number one overall pick, and Jim Irsay is right. He will be one of the better quarterbacks of this generation as long as Jim Irsay doesn't mess it up. I mean, that's ultimately what it comes down to, making sure that you put the requisite talent around
Andrew Luck. So the person who said it,
so he can do his
job, is responsible. So if Andrew Luck gets in his career, we can be like, okay, who's responsible? We can go right back to Irsay.
100%.
Right?
That's okay. Exactly what we need to do, because mm-hmm. the offensive line that was in front of Andrew Luck has been awful up until this point. Now, they did themselves some favors over the course of the last couple of years in the draft. They got Ryan Kelly, the center out of Alabama, as a first-round draft pick. This year, they drafted Quentin Nelson out of Notre Dame mm-hmm. in the first round, and then Braden Smith from Auburn out of the second round. Fortify that guard-center-guard combination, and that ultimately ends up being the fabric of the pocket so Andrew Luck can step up away from edge pressure and be able to do his job. But that's what it comes down to, making sure that Andrew Luck is available for the team. As long as Andrew Luck is available for the team, he's going to do his thing. You can see the talent. That was obvious as soon as he stepped onto that team. He made that a playoff-caliber team. So mm-hmm. as long as Andrew Luck is upright, the Indianapolis Colts are always going to have a chance to be competitive.
But part of Andrew Luck staying upright is on Andrew Luck. Like, part of Andrew Luck's, you mentioned it when you were talking about him last week. Since he's coming in the league, no quarterback has taken more hits in the pocket than Andrew
From
Luck.
From 2014, 2016, Andrew Luck averaged more pass attempts while being pressured than any other quarterback. But he has a throwback style to him that he will not let the play end. So what Nick is saying is he will hold on to the ball. So some of this pressure and some of these sacks are his own doing.
And sometimes it leads to greatness. I watched him. I mentioned I used to work in Houston, but I'm from Kansas City. I watched him execute an all-time playoff comeback against my Chiefs on a lot of plays that I thought were dead, were supposed to be dead. He's moving in the pocket, moving and finds T.Y. Hilton down the middle. But the risk v. reward on that, when you're coming off a year out of football, when you had multiple years with a banged-up shoulder, on recognizing, man, I got an incompletion's not the worst thing. Throwing the ball away is not the worst thing. And Luck doesn't get banged on this like some other guys do, probably because of how he looks and because we know he's such a great passer. His running style, which can be almost a punishing running style for a quarterback. He's not a guy that runs and then all of a sudden is looking to get out of bounds. He's a very good athlete. He's an incredibly strong guy, and he will fight for the extra yards. He's got to dial some of that back in addition to, of course, it was smart to draft Quentin Nelson. Like, they need better offensive line play. Some of that's got to be a change up here.
Yeah, but also we have to realize, too, for the first time, his head coach is going to be a guy who played the position in Frank Reich. And I saw the impact that Frank Reich, not only did he have on Carson Wentz, but, man, the impact that he had on Nick Foles for that playoff run and how he made Nick better. So I expect that part to get corrected. Now it's a matter of, will they support him with some type of running game, which they have never done? And who are his playmakers? Mm-hmm. Like T.Y. Hilton. That's it. I know T.Y. he say he always open, but he gonna have to be because they don't really have a proven other commodity. But right now is an important part in Andrew Luck's career because not only what he's going through coming off the injury, but, man, what's going on in New England with Tom Brady? How long is Tom Brady gonna be the face of the NFL or the AFC? Man, the AFC is looking for someone to be able to be like, man, when Tom Brady stepped off, like, I'm right. When LeBron left the East, there wasn't anyone. There's several names, but there wasn't anyone right there. People talk about Kyrie, and we talk about the Greek freak. But who is going to take over the East? Who's going to do that in the AFC? And I believe, man, it's set up for Andrew Luck to be that guy.
You talk about some of the changes that he needs to make, or just health aside, assuming that he's healthy. The fact that he hasn't played in 19 months, he missed the better part of the last 3 years. Is there an acclimation period that he will face just getting back into game action?
Yeah, there's going to be a little bit of an adjustment period for Andrew Luck. Now, why I'm optimistic about that is Andrew Luck has actually talked to Drew Brees about going through that issue with the shoulder and what you can expect in the rehab process. And Drew Brees, and they've been communicating this offseason and trying to help guide him through that process because there is going to be an acclimation to being able to play competitive football, especially in the NFL. Things move a little bit faster faster when you start talking about getting into regular season games than they do in OTAs, minicamp, or training camp. So there will be that adjustment. But I'm always of the opinion that your quarterback is going to have to win from the pocket. And so in order to be successful in the NFL, you got to make sure you have an offensive line that's in place that can be able to consistently pass protect, because we know that they're asking Andrew Luck to make chicken salad out of chicken you know what. But it's just one of those situations where this is what's expected when you have a quarterback that's drafted as high as he is. He's going to have to elevate the play of everybody around him. Now, good for Andrew Luck. He's got the skill set to do it. Now it's just a matter of them protecting him so he can go out there and do it.
And to your point, Sarah, the Colts came out this past week and said he's going to play more in the preseason than your typical unquestioned starting quarterback will, to try to knock some of that rust off. And to see your point about the AFC, we talk all the time about how many great quarterbacks are in the NFC, how stacked the NFC is. The AFC's got three guys at the top, quarterback-wise, who have been there seemingly forever. Rivers, Big Ben, Brady, obviously older than them. And then they've got a bunch of guys at the, I don't want to say the bottom, but very young, whether it's Watson or Pat Mahomes, Baker Mayfield.
Marcus Mariota.
The Sam Darnold, Josh Allen. There's not like the veteran that's right in the middle of his prime in the AFC, except for Luck. Luck is the guy who, which also means when those older guys age out and those younger guys aren't to their prime yet, it could be his. Like, he could be the unquestioned best quarterback in that entire conference for quite some time. We know he has the ability for it. We'll see if they have the pieces for it and he has the health for it.
What about the pieces defensively?
Oh, they're going to have to score a lot of points. You said the Giants are going to score 24. They're going to have to score 34.
Does that factor into
It factors into it, but there's not a lot of good things we can say. And your mama say it. You ain't got nothing good to say, Sarah.
Don't say nothing at all.
Chris Canty, thank you so much for being here with us. Coming up, how is Odell changing his mindset for 2018? That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, and we are talking Odell Beckham Jr. Coming off a rocky 2017 season, Beckham is looking for a contract extension and a fresh start in 2018. OBJ said he's approaching the 2018 season in a whole new way. Take a listen.
I love football. Football was always a vice for me. It was always my how I could let everything out, and just being able to be back on the field. Like I said, I remember waking up 4 a.m. and crawling upstairs to my bed and laughing to myself, you know, like it's gonna be a hell of a ride for you to get back to where you're at. And now I'm here, and there's still a lot more for me to do. So it's truly, truly, I'm just thankful that God, you know, is able to put me back out there. Taking it day by day and trying my best to just make my mindset. Every day I wake up, I'm gonna be happy. I'm gonna do this right. I'm gonna do the very best that I can, and whatever it is that I was doing, just changing mindset, and it's helped me out a lot, you know, with everything.
CeCe, what's your reaction to what Odell had to say?
I'm not surprised, but I thought that was going to be his mindset last year, entering last season. Now, I think the fact that he got hurt, I think the fact that there was a lot of emotion as the season started with some off-the-field stuff. I know he was very, very confused.
I'm sorry.
Bless you.
Pardon.
I know he was very, very confused as we started the season. As some of the protest stuff started happening, he didn't know how to support it or what to do. So I know that was on his mind early in the season. And talking to him, I talked with him before one of the games early, and he was talking to me as far as what he should do, his reaction to everything. So Nick and I spent a lot of time last offseason with Odell. So if you would have told us this would have came out last season, we'd have been like, man, he's going to have a great year. We told everyone he was going to have a great year. He's in the right place. And he was saying the same things now. He hadn't changed a lot. It's just a matter of him being consistent on a daily basis. I like the fact that he talked about who he's going to be when he's not playing or how he's going to try to do things even when he's not playing football, because I know sports fans think that all athletes do is play games. No, they don't. Most of their time is spent either socializing, going to work, working with colleagues, or working with their family the way normal people do. And I think that Odell, the more normal that he can become, and the more important it is for him to be good at other things, being a good person, being timely, how he treats people, I think that will carry over to the field. So I was glad to see him repeat things that he's told me privately.
Right. And in Odell's defense, to a degree, we don't know how last year would have gone. We don't know if he would have shown the behavior of someone that is a matured or changed individual. We think he probably wouldn't have, because when we see him score the touchdown, he does that that peeing dog celebration, and everyone got real bothered by it. Now, if you listen to Odell, Odell will say that was a commentary on that was the week the president had called the players SOBs.
Yes. Yes.
And he said, okay, so if I'm a dog, I'm gonna act like a dog. That was not how anyone took it.
Right.
And I don't know if people believed him, to be totally honest.
No, that he was
doing some higher level social commentary. But what I do know is he was, as you've talked about, looking for a way to show solidarity with players.
Yes.
And he is, because he has so much endorsement money and because he is like almost a quarterback level as far as profile, he probably felt he can't take a knee. I'm not saying he did it the right way. I'm not defending the peeing like a dog celebration. I'm just trying to let the audience know
insight.
Some context into what he's thinking. And then he breaks his leg. Like, he gets injured in the preseason, then he breaks his leg, and all of a sudden, he had no bad comments anywhere from when we talked to him last offseason till right now. What he had was that video.
Yes.
And so, like, the video is, there's no defending it, but as I said then and I'll say now, it's probably not the first time Odell's been in a hotel room like that. And so, like, it's not like he was acting worse than typical. Like, I think this is probably somewhat typical. Like,
But the press conference speaks to things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to try to do things, all things, the right way.
And that's what I don't know what the right word is, but your key with Odell is we know how great he's been. We know how great he can be, which is even better than he's been. And you know better than he knows, better than any current athlete knows, because you're out of the game now, that you only got so much time. And the limited amount of time, there is no going back to college and getting your degree as far as I'm going to go back and work harder in the offseason. I'm going to go back and work on these things once your career is over, or even during your career, once your athletic prime is gone. And so the point that you keep harping on is good enough for Odell? Or is truly being what he has communicated to you? I've been there when he said it. I want to be the greatest wide receiver ever. I want to leave you in the dust. Like, I want to do all these things. Are you saying that, or are you acting accordingly? His public comments this entire offseason have been, to me, in the right direction, and I have no doubt how great of a football player he is. I have no question about that.
Do you think it impacts his mindset at all, or will it if he reaches a contract extension before the season with the Giants? Do you think that will affect him at all as he enters into the season?
It will definitely affect him, because Odell is worried about the overall security of things. Him getting hurt last year, getting that broken bone, it did scare him, because now if he had a significant injury, say it was his neck, would they give him those guarantees? And you're not going to get those types of guarantees. So, yes, it should change him. But his mindset should already be changing before he gets the money, because once he gets the money, it's too late to change then. That's why I was always staying on his back as far as being, if people are going to trust you with those types of guarantees, you're talking about $50, $60 million of guarantees, they're expecting a professional football player on and off the field. Their brand, they're expecting their brand to be protected by those guarantees. So, yes, I do believe that new contract would continue to help him evolve.
And, Chris, when you and I spent all that time with him the summer before this when we were living in Los Angeles, Odell had no career-wise traumatic events. Now, this offseason, he's had about as many as you can. All right, how about you suffer your first major injury, cost you a season, check.
Mm-hmm.
How about the team openly shops trading you? Okay, all right, check. How about another coach gets fired? Like, he wasn't there the year that it all went downhill, but whatever it was, that's on his resume as well, fair or not.
Yes.
Check. Like, all of these things have happened. And then your biggest... your biggest public embarrassment off the football field, that video. Because all the stuff with Odell has been sideline stuff, end zone stuff. It had never been like getting in fights at bars or that video. So you have four major, either public embarrassments or sports-wise, traumatic events. Those are the types of things that will make you adjust behavior, if anything will. I'm not guaranteeing it'll happen, but if anything will, it's going through all of those things in quick succession. Like, all right, this is fleeting. This can be taken away. And I could have gotten my butt shipped to Jacksonville, and my brand is not, I'm not OBJ in Jacksonville.
Right. And the one thing, too, that we can't lose sight of, because I expect Odell to continue to evolve to get better. But what he does is catch the football, run with the football, and be very, very entertaining. Now, I do expect him to entertain people, all right? I don't expect him to act like Barry Sanders.
No.
I don't expect him to act like Larry Fitzgerald, because he's got a bounce about him. He's got a showmanship about him that's really, really special. And I expect to see more of that.
Speaking of showmanship, why are the Rockets kicking the tires on J.R. Smith?
He's a showman.
That's next on First Things First. Time for In or Out. Vegas released their NBA over-unders. The Lakers are tied for the fourth highest win total in the West at 48.5. So, CeCe, are you in or out on the Lakers being a lock for the playoffs?
Oh, I'm out. Wordplay. Lock.
Okay.
Yeah, because, man, what if my man happens to have first time? Yes. What if that happens? I can't even say it. Okay. So lock, I got to be out on the lock part.
Well, I mean, what if the season's canceled? Because those are the two most likely, those are equally
likely. If the collective bargaining agreement wasn't signed, I'd be like, yeah.
All right, I'm in on the Lakers being a lock to make the playoffs. I can't guarantee their seed. My gut now would say I think they'll be the 3 seed in the West, but they could, I think, 6 seeds in play. But no. You have LeBron James. You have LeBron James on your roster. You're going to win around 50 games at minimum, even out West, and you're going to make the playoffs. I am in on them being a lock.
Because that's the only reason why I went out, because I knew he would be in.
Oh.
I'm trying to do a show.
Attention to detail.
I'm trying to do a show
attention
here.
Attention to detail. Okay. On to the East. Boston get a lot of respect from Vegas. Their over-under is set at 57.5, the most in the East. So, Nick, are you in or out on the Celtics being the best team in the Eastern Conference?
I'm out on this. I know that the conventional wisdom is Boston is. I happen to think Philly is, and I think if I'm ranking them, I go Philly, Boston, Toronto, but you can make a case to jumble that in any order. Toronto and Philly, by the way, their over-under wins are both 54.5, so only 3 behind
Boston.
So
a great race.
So, right, so yeah. You anticipate a great race. I'm a huge believer in Ben Simmons and Embiid, even though I saw Embiid get bitten by a tiger this weekend. That was a little concerning, or a lion, but I'm in on Philly being the best team in the East, so I'm out on Boston.
Yeah, I'm in on Boston. I'm in on Boston's coach, even growing with the most talented roster that he's ever seen. But I'm in on Kyrie Irving. I just got a feeling that Kyrie's going to have a spectacular year. I believe they are the best team in the East, and Kyrie will be in the conversation of, man, is he the best player? Is he the best player? Yeah, so I'm in. I'm in with the Celtics.
I like it. Back to the West now. According to reports, the Rockets have, quote, kicked the tires on a potential trade with the Cavs for J.R. Smith. CeCe, are you in or out on J.R. helping Houston close the gap with the Warriors?
I don't know. Here in New York, we don't use necessarily the vehicle that we normally would use. Nick's still driving. I don't drive as much as I used to none. But I ain't had no good experience kicking no tire. I didn't know
where you were going.
I just haven't had a good experience in kicking a tire. And JR, for me, this, I'm concerned about Vegas. Is this, he might be working for the Warriors. Let's send him wherever we got competition. Send him to Cleveland. He'll call a timeout for us right when we need it. He won't call a timeout. Man, JR, man, I'm almost done with JR. JR, please don't go to Houston. Right. Houston got a good thing going.
I am, unfortunately, out on JR helping close the gap with the Warriors. A couple years ago, I'd have been in. I've seen JR play well in the finals, be a good, third or fourth option. But his last two regular seasons, forget the gaff in game one of the finals, his last two regular seasons have been just indefensible. And so do I think he would help them in a series against the Warriors? I don't think he'd help them throughout the season or in a series. I think good in Cleveland. He can be Kevin the Robin to Kevin Love's Batman and what they got going on in Cleveland next year. Well, I'm sorry, the Robin to Jetty Osmond's Batman for what they got going on
Jetty.
In Cleveland next
yeah.
year. So I'm out.
Let's switch to the NFL. Jim Irsay has nothing but praise for his quarterback. He says Andrew Luck could be one of the greatest ever to play the game. So, Nick, are you in or out on the Colts returning to the playoffs this year?
I know the AFC is weak, and I know historically the AFC South has been weak. But I do not think the division is weak this year, and I am out for that reason. I think the Colts, the Texans will be much better. The Jags, it's going to be hard to duplicate what they did last year defensively, but they're going to be so good defensively. And the Titans, we forget about them. They were a playoff team last year. So,
yes.
And I was trying to think, who's the best defensive player on the Colts? All right, Malik Hooker. And after him, who they got. So, for a lot of reasons, not Andrew Luck's fault, I'd be out on this.
And all three of those defenses, the Titans, Jacksonville, and the Texans, man, they could be top 10. They could have three top 10 defenses in their division. So, I got to be out. I believe Luck gets back to top form. I would like Frank Wright as a coach there, first time coaching, but I'm out as far as the playoffs.
All right, moving on. Odell Beckham Jr. isn't only talking contracts, he's talking Super Bowls, saying he wants to, quote, hang one of these banners up this season. CeCe, are you in or out on the Giants being legit Super Bowl contenders this year?
Oh, I'm out on that. There's too many teams in the NFC, and they got too many weaknesses as far as their defense. Man, the offensive line, how are they going to be able to protect? Will they have a sustainable running game? So I'm out as far as a Super Bowl. Man, a good season for them would be in the playoffs.
Great. That'd be a great season. I mean, they had the number two pick of the draft. I understand they had a spate of injuries, most notably Odell, but he wasn't the only one. But I am out as well. They are in they're in a division with arguably the best team in the NFL. They're in the far tougher conference. I don't think all of a sudden Eli Manning's going to be better this year than he has been over the last few years. So for all those reasons, Super Bowl contender. I might have been out on playoff contender. I am definitely out on Super Bowl contender.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.